Illinois until 5:15 p.m. and for Moultrie County until 5:30. Line of strong to severe thunderstorms is currently pushing through that area, and the storms are moving east to northeast at around anywhere from 25 to 35 miles per hour. The storms have now entered western Moultrie County. They're in eastern Macon County, about to push into Piatt County, and they're pushing through the middle of Shelby County right now. There's also a flash flood warning in effect until 8 p.m. for Logan and neighboring Menard counties, and there's a severe thunderstorm watch in effect for Champaign, Christian, Coles, Cumberland, DeWitt, Douglas, Logan, Macon, Moultrie, Piatt, Sangamon, and Shelby counties in the WILL severe weather coverage area until 7 p.m. The warnings for severe weather, Moultrie County until 5:30, Macon and Shelby until 5:15. It looks like for Macon, it's just the easternmost part right now that we're concerned about. This is WILL Urbana.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
We move from the poetry of Jack Gilbert on All Things Considered from his book Refusing Heaven to the poetry of a friend of his from Berkeley days, Lawrence Lieberman, professor of English at the University of Illinois, who's published 14 collections of poetry over the years, and his newest collection is just out this year called Carib's Leap, a collection of poems about the Caribbean. From the first section of that book, Sea Poems, here's a poem, the first poem in this book. Remember that the earth is made primarily of water, and of course the Caribbean is a place famous for its water. Here's a poem about that called Transvestite by Lawrence Lieberman.
I must undo my robes of the air, untie my earth cloak of foreignness, step out of my fear being, ease into my sea skin of a fish. I must enter my salt self, drawing the smooth current about me like heavenly drapes. A brainy stranger, I divest crew cut and gold fillings, the silver ring on my wedding finger, the watertight wise ticker at my wrist, proudly droning its one secret to the wet world's deafness, time's muffled bees buzzing. I must unremember my name, my birthplace, the number on my license plates, my address, the brand of my children's toothpaste, the blessed earth smell of my wife's hair. To belong here, I become a nameless, dumb, free and easy man-thing. A presence infinitely deep blue-green, full, rain-caressive, invites me, opens to one just opening up, who, not now as a lame stranger, may enter. I take in my hands all that I touch, and leave no fingerprints, no signature.
From the collection Carib's Leap, a new book by Lawrence Lieberman of poetry about the Caribbean, from a section right at the very beginning, section number one, called Sea Poems, S-E-A Poems, entitled Transvestite, read by permission of the poet who's here in the studio with us reading his own poetry, and also by the publisher, People Press. People Tree Press, thank you. People Tree Press, and that people is spelled not P-E-A, but P-E-E-P-A-L, from England. Larry, you were recently in England and read some of your poetry on the BBC there. What was that experience like?
Well, it was quite extraordinary. I was interviewed by a woman named Jamaica, who was from Kenya. And she was quite remarkable and a wonderful interviewer, and it was also a faith-based program. Mm. And she was quite interested in the spiritual aspects of the poetry.
Now, your poems are often not explicitly religious, but as you say, are often spiritual. What in this poem, Transvestite, tell us about the title.
Well, I had been living in the Virgin Islands, teaching at the newly founded college in St. Thomas. I was their first English department. I was spending altogether more of my time than I had any right to swimming, skin diving. And it was not until a couple of years into my life in St. Thomas that I found myself writing poetry about the underwater world of the skin diver. And I found that to convince myself that I had a right to be writing about the world of the fish, that somehow I had to undergo a rite of passage into this other territory, that to somehow earn my spiritual passport, so to speak. And I found myself fumbling for a number of months to try to find a language that would make me feel as if I had earned the right of entry. And this was one of the few poems that came at the beginning of that process and made me feel like I was finally finding my way.
In this first section, where you have a number of poems called under the category of sea poems, you have a second one called Skin Songs, and your third one is The Diving Ballet. And under this, you have the words For Benny. Tell us about Benny.
Well, Benny is my wife.
of 50 years.
Yes, it will be 50 years this June. Most people in town here know her as Bernice. And for the most part, she continues to be called Benny only by members of her family or friends from 20 or 30 or more years ago. But to me, she's still Benny.
When did you write the poem, The Diving Ballet?
That would have been in the early 70s. Mm-hmm.
Now, the first poem you read for us today, Transvestite, was published in The New Yorker.
Yes.
How exciting is it for a poet to be selected to be published in that wonderful magazine?
Well, it was a thrill for me because I loved the poetry that they published.
How old were you when your first poem was published there?
I would have been 27.
Ah, very good.
The first poem I had in The New Yorker was in 62.
I see. Uh-huh. And where was The Diving Ballet published?
That was originally in the Yale Review.
The Yale Review. Mm-hmm. Would you read that for us?
I'd love to. It's a poem in which skin diving and dance and, in a way, lovemaking as well, all become part of the same metaphor, a poem about swimming with my wife. The Diving Ballet, For Benny. No one can teach us the deep water moves. We are swimming a dance to music we cannot hear in our heads. We hear with our skins. Holding hands to keep from drifting apart, we try to embrace. We brush lips. But a nearer thing than each other, a kissing of many skins, is wrenching us out of our tuneness. In water suspended, our bodies are inside and out of themselves. As I fall, you rise. It is a diving ballet. Above, you break surface. Below, leaning to stay down, I touch bottom, thinking, can this be earth? I am flying so close to a floor whose one will is to send me back, feet first, to a ceiling of wind. I resist, dreaming myself empty. Weightlessness holds like an anchor. Now, overhead, motionless, you shadow me, belly floater. Instantly you lunge, tumbling. Taken by impulse, you are set free in your body head flung back, back somersaulting in a long arc, a slow rolling lyric sweep. As I rise below you, I see in your upside down face, curving up to me, the adventure your body, newly strange, is beginning to believe in love with itself. For minutes you do not breathe. You see in, looking out. Something within you is swimming beyond, getting further ahead, the more slowly it strokes. Your mind must slow down to catch up. In spaces between no breaths, you are learning to hear the waves of your pulse cross the self abyss.
A poem titled The Diving Ballet for Binny. Bernice, our poet's Lawrence Lieberman's spouse of 50 years soon, from his recent collection, published first in England and now in this country just this spring, Caribs Leap, C-A-R-I-B, apostrophe S, Caribs Leap. We'll be learning more about that title in just a few moments. Selected a new poems of the Caribbean, published by People Tree Press and available in this country by the Independent Publishers Group in Chicago. It's also available, of course, in local bookstores, including the Atlanta Union Bookstore here on the University of Illinois campus. For folks who are listening to this program far away from Champaign-Urbana, and we are heard, of course, over the air all the way to Chicago and Indianapolis and places in between, and on our website, heard around the world, people who would like to purchase this book may do so by using the following 800 number, 1-800-888-4741. That's from the Independent Publishers Group in Chicago. Caribs Leap by Lawrence Lieberman. Larry, let's talk a little bit about your style of writing. Now, you have different styles you use, I suppose, because of different topics and moods and emotions and ideas. But this poem is striking to me because it has more one-syllable words than two-syllable words, and it has only four or five three-syllable words. It's a poem that is very moving, but for example, the line, "We hear with our skins," a wonderful line, all one-syllable words. Were you consciously trying to write in this style because of what you were saying in this poem?
I think that's fair. that somehow, as I look back on it now and as I try to re-experience this poem, because it hopefully comes alive for me in a new way when I read it again, there's a sense of self-hypnosis in this poem, an attempt to put myself in a state through language that is somehow a kind of mirror of the actual process of swimming underwater. And the plainer language seemed more appropriate somehow to this kind of hypnotic state than the more descriptive kind of language I seem to use in most of my poems.
I want to ask you to read several more poems, as much as we have time for, and of course we know at any moment we might be interrupted because of weather bulletins, but we've successfully made it through two, so there's a great start. For listeners who may not know your work, you've published 14 different books. Your poems, individual poems, have been published in really all of the places where good poetry is published, magazines, journals, small literary magazines, collections. One of your pieces was recently published in the Hopwood Awards from University of Michigan that go back over 75 years of prize-winning poems. And yours was selected along with a number of wonderful poets, Marge Piercy, John Ciardi, Max Appel, Robert Hayden. But for listeners who may not have encountered your work before until hearing you today on the radio, how'd you get started in poetry?
Well, that's an interesting question. I was a pre-med student at University of Michigan, and up to that time, my interest in poetry was strictly that of a reader, and it wasn't until my third year of college, when I completed most of my pre-med requirements, that I took a couple of classes in literature that really made me fall in love with poetry. And I fell in love with it as a reader a good stretch before I ever began writing poetry. There were a couple of teachers that particularly inspired me, you might say. One of them was Austin Warren, and his course in Henry James, interestingly enough, somehow brought out the poet in me. Subsequently, I took classes from Malcolm Cowley that were also a great inspiration for me.
Now, when you were at the University of Michigan, you started writing poetry yourself, encouraged by these professors?
Indeed. Actually, I wrote a novel and some stories and essays before I wrote any poetry. Hmm. And the novel won a minor prize, Hopwood Award, and I showed it to my favorite professor, Austin Warren, and he frowned. He didn't like that novel at all. And that was the bad news. The good news was, he said, I can tell from reading this novel that you ought to be writing poetry.
Really? Interesting.
Huh. Oddly enough, I believed him.
And how long was it before you had your first poem published?
Shortly after I left University of Michigan and began graduate work at Berkeley. I left Michigan in 58 and began work at Berkeley in 59.
But you switched from medical school.
I had dropped out of medical school in 56 and then got a master's degree at Michigan.
And it was in what?
In English.
So you left medicine for English.
Exactly.
Okay.
And it was during that last year of my graduate work at Michigan that I won a Hopwood Award in poetry.
I see.
Then I went to Berkeley to work on a PhD. And during that first year, 1959, my first poems were published, actually simultaneously in The Nation and the Saturday Review.
So those were individual poems.
Right.
In two places, Saturday Review and The Nation. What an interesting combination.
It was just a lucky accident.
Uh-huh. How many places had you sent poetry before those two were accepted?
Oh, probably a good dozen or 15.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it took persistence at the beginning.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm. And then how long before your first book of poems? You now have published 14.
The first book of poems wasn't published until almost 10 years later, 1968.
Where were you then?
At that point, I was en route from the Virgin Islands to Champaign-Urbana. I was still living in St. Thomas when the book appeared in spring 68, and I began teaching here in the fall of that year.
So when you left Michigan, were you and Bernice already married?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
We married when we were still undergraduates in Michigan. Mm-hmm. Actually, a few months before I started medical school.
And how did you survive as a grad student in English? Because that's not a department known for its huge funding of graduate students.
Well, I did have a fellowship.
Did you?
And Bernice had a job.
Okay.
And we first lived together in a little room behind the bookstore where she worked. Mm. That room was $40 a month, if you can believe that. Our bathroom was in the basement. We had to go down the stairs and fight off the bats to get there.
This was in Berkeley?
No, this was in
Ann Arbor.
Right?
I see. Where are you from originally?
I'm from Detroit, and Bernice is from a suburb of Chicago, Olympia Fields.
I see. Now, this book of yours, Carib's Leap, you have a dedication page, and on this page you mention, if I remember correctly, some grandchildren?
Yes, indeed.
How many?
Four.
Mariah, Dylan, Jesse, and Isla?
They are the four dedicatees.
And also in memory of your mother.
She is the fifth, my mother, indeed.
Anita Cohen Lieberman.
Right.
And she died in 85.
Yes.
Now, Carib's Leap, tell us about that poem, the title poem for your collection.
Well, My mother and I were planning actually to take a trip together to the Caribbean the year she died. We had done a trip together to the Caribbean a few years before when we went to the Bahamas together. And we were planning a trip to Grenada when her final illness prevented that trip. And she died fairly soon, within a couple of months of my knowing that she was ill. Then when I finally, 2 years later, made a trip to Grenada and was still in mourning, I met a man in a small town in Grenada, Grenville, who had also lost his mother fairly recently, quite recently. And we commiserated with one another. And he suggested that we go to a small town nearby where there was a cliff that was called Carib's Leap, he said, though I've also heard it's been called Leaper's Hill. And together talk about our mothers. And we did that. And while we were on this cliff, he talked about how the cliff came to be called Carib's Leap. He told me the legendary story of all of the remaining Carib Indians in Grenada who were escaping their pursuers and committed communal suicide by leaping from that cliff. And as I thought about the spirits of those Indians, I was also thinking about the spirits of our mothers. Hmm. And there seemed to be some kind of confluence of spirits that I sensed at the time, having no idea that I would subsequently write a poem about this experience.
This poem is probably too long for us to risk reading the whole of it on the air, but could you read part of it and give us a flavor of this poem? This is from the recently published book, Carib's Leap. This is the title poem for the collection from the section on Grenada. And is it pronounced Montserrat?
Montserrat.
Montserrat by Lawrence Lieberman, read by permission of the author and Peepal Tree Press, the publisher. Here's a portion of Carib's Leap.
So I'll be reading just an excerpt of the poem. I'm going to read the first little section of it and then jump ahead a little bit and read a segment from the middle and the end. Okay. Carib's Leap. Hailing Charles, alias Polly Wally, recounts how his mother died last year, this very week, at age 76. Mine, 2 years back to the day, just 6 weeks shy of her 80th birth month. Too soon, too young, we sigh in vocal duet. Both only sons, both orphaned in middle age, but no less devastated by that parental void than if we'd been teenagers. Oh, we are half teens still, half mid-century lads, and today boy half swallows man, as we, tipsy too, asway, invoke the spirit of our mothers, both snatched from us by stroke. And here stood they, all arms twined in a last communal embrace, some 40-odd survivors of the Carib tribe, men, women, small babes and toddlers in whatever proportion, no one knows the exact number, their Spaniard pursuers clamoring at their backs. Whatever fate beckoned, slaughter by musket fire, burnings at the stake, or most dreaded enslavement to those fish-belly-faced conquistadores, they chose, all of one voice howl in the trade winds, same winds as today, to die, and yes, die out, in one mystic, synchronized, bold leap of defiance to the naked rocks below. They knew their family multitude of spirits, the clan oversoul, would fly up, while their hand-clasped lean bodies gored on the horned rock pinnacles below and soar into a life beyond, a life forevermore remote from terrible nonsense, Polly Wally's words, himself an unbookish man, of dem white barbarians. gull screech. Two frigate birds lunge for the feathered small game overhead. The prolonged shrieks may be caribs adrift on the wind updrafts, or perhaps they may be our two mothers in chorus, quavering. It's all right. We too are at peace, spared life's last terrible nonsense. Here we are. Oh, we do continue, just as you last remember us, only sons, our beauty intact. You know how it grew ever stronger in age, peaked. My mom, but 2 days before she died, had her hair done up spiffy by her favorite beautician. We sat in the Cuban-Chinese family diner, awaiting our entree. The chef's 12-year-old petite daughter, who served us, kept staring and staring at Anita, always finding more pretext to come back, ever back to our table. Water refills, extra fortune cookie. At last she could contain herself no more and blurted out, "Senora, you are so beautiful. Your hair, so beautiful. I've never seen anyone look so. Mother looked puzzled and mildly annoyed. "Oh, what can she possibly mean by that?" she asked the mute tablecloth. But who could explain? I merely repeated the child's plain words. They were true, and from me, her only son, she would accept, if vaguely, their drift. Drab schoolhouse to one side, Catholic church across the path. The horror and violence of old Grenada's darkest day seem effaced, dulled by the bland civic exteriors. And below, the many thick shrubs and sea-resistant low trees seem to shroud those jagged rocks, to blunt all rugged pointy spires that burst open the soft bellies, rib cages and thighs of the self-flung families. Crushed limbs or skulls, like so many soft rinded melons hurled at the sharp cutting edges. We may suppose they aimed themselves, like practiced skydivers or parachutists, at the most keen rimmed silhouettes flashing below, honed by the sea's whetstone to a razor's hairline cutting edge, their bodies looping in glory of their last aerial dance, last dream flight. And yes, we do see them steering their plunge to greet, head foremost, the punishing raw angles of rock, welcoming that great howl of speediest death, the surest brain crushers most dear, oh yes, most fiercely sought after.
Caribs Leap, the title poem from the new book of poetry by Lawrence Lieberman, published by Peepal Tree Press, and available from the Independent Publishers Group in Chicago. Listeners who would like a copy of this marvelous collection may contact Independent Publishers Group, 1-800-888-4741. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs, and ordinarily we invite listeners to call in with questions or comments, but because of the weather situation this afternoon and trying to get through poems undisturbed, we've succeeded now with several this first half of the program. I'm very pleased with that, but we're not giving out phone numbers this time because our engineer is needing to keep close track of the weather situation, and we will be bringing you weather information as we have it. We'll continue in a moment with our guest in the studio, poet Lawrence Lieberman, who is author of 14 different volumes of poetry, or 14 collections of poetry, and three other books of literary essays. Professor of English, retired from the University of Illinois here at Urbana-Champaign. Let me tell listeners who's coming up on Keeping the Faith in the weeks ahead. Next week we have a very interesting program, May 7. Professor Bruce Folk will be our guest. He'll be talking about intelligent design, the weak link. That'll be May 7 here on Keeping the Faith. May 14, we'll have several visitors from several guests from several different religious traditions talking about the art of being neighbors. The Whirlwind Project is in full swing this spring, and we'll be talking with some of the representatives of different religions who are using art and music and bread baking and all kinds of exciting things to try to cross those religious boundaries and have people communicate from their perspective as Muslims or Hindus or Buddhists or Christians or Jews about what it means to be in a community together. So that's May 14. Scott Preller will be talking with us on May 21st. He's a Christian Scientist. We'll have a artist on the program the first Sunday in June, June 4th, Tom Albrecht, talking about one of his recent projects. So those are some of the programs coming up here on Keeping the Faith in the weeks ahead. Support for these programs is provided in part by the University YMCA here at the University of Illinois. The Y is the oldest charity on campus. It's been here 133 years, although it was started by Christian students with an evangelical motive. In recent decades, the Y has been open to folks of any faith, any tradition, and we're eager to have students and others participate in our many programs. Students have been involved in service at the Y for low over these 100 years. Just today, a new student group, the Korean Cultural Center, began at the Y. They had their opening dedication this afternoon. Korean students are the largest group of international students at the university. There are over 1,000 students from South Korea here at the University of Illinois these days. And these students now have started a Korean Cultural Center, sharing a room at the Y and trying to pass on their culture to not only people from Korea, but for others who might be interested. There are many young people, many children in the community whose parents are grad students, or one parent at least who's a grad student here. And this is a place now where these young people can come and keep in touch with their own Korean culture. The Y has many other programs. I want to thank all the people who contributed to our grand fundraising auction a week ago. It was a fine success, and we thank all the people who donated items and the businesses and corporations who contributed and all the people who came to the auction and bought things that we hope a good bargain and now are enjoying those items. And, of course, it helped the Y with our fundraising, which we need to do regularly to keep the Y going. We do accept gifts, not only of money, but also of cars, trucks, motorcycles, vans, boats, people, anything with a title. You can donate to the Y, and we sell it, and you can take the value of what we sell it for off on your taxes as a charitable contribution. If you'd be interested in donating a vehicle to the Y, please do call me, Steve Shoemaker. The Y's number is 337-1500. Well, let's get back to our poetry reading for today. Excuse me, there was one other announcement I'd been asked to make, and I do want to make this. This is an important bit for the religious life in this community. For those listening near Champaign-Urbana, this coming Thursday, May 4th, there'll be we'll hear some readings. The collection is called Voices of Peace. And this is within the Christian tradition, but there'll be dramatic readings of Christians who are advocating for peace and justice the year 30 to the present day of the Common Era. Readings from Martin Luther King Jr., from Tom Fox, from Jimmy Carter, from Dorothy Day, from the Catholic tradition, St. Francis, Oscar Romero. This will be this Thursday at 7 p.m. at Community United Church of Christ. It's sponsored by many different Christian groups, but that will be this Thursday, May 4th. Dramatic readings from the Christian tradition, Voices for Peace. Well, let's do get back to our guest today in the studio, Lawrence Lieberman, whose new book is just out, published first in England And just this month, here in this country, Caribs Leap. Now, this book has a lovely kind of turquoise watercolor of the Caribbean color cover, and also a work of art. Now, your last time you were on Keeping the Faith, we were talking about your last book that dealt particularly with some artists, and you have another painting. Is this painting on the cover of this book also from the Caribbean?
Not only is it also from the Caribbean, but it's a painting by the wonderful artist who paid us a great visit in Champaign-Urbana a year ago, October. He and I did a program together at the Verdi Gallery. Stanley Graves, artist originally from Guyana, now teaching at Barbados College in Barbados, was kind enough to offer me this painting for the cover. I spotted that painting in his house in Barbados when we were there as part of his private collection and fell in love with it on the spot.
And your last book that came out 2 years ago, Hour of the Mango Black Moon, includes a couple others of his as well as other artists
right.
from the Caribbean that kind of inspired some of your poems.
That book is indeed a whole book of poems as meditations upon paintings. Eight of those paintings were Stanley Graves, and the remainder were two other artists of the Caribbean, Russ Akin and Russ Aishi. A couple of the poems in the new book are also about paintings, but nothing like the last one.
So the new book is Caribs Leap, and you have, this is selected poems from your rich history of writing poetry, but it's also some new poems, quite a few new poems in here as well. Would you consider reading one of those new poems for us?
I would be very happy to. The most substantial cycle of in the new poems section at the back of the book is a series of poems about the big drum dance, a wonderful African folk art that has been revived and maintained, as far as I know, intact in the wonderful little island in the Grenadines called Carriacou. An island quite near Grenada, and I was lucky enough to find the probably best aficionado of the big drums living there now, Winston Fleury, who is the head of the big drum group, and has done a lot of work for the culture of Carriacou. In the United States, he won an NEA grant here, but he welcomed me to his little farm home, and we spent a whole afternoon there, talking about the big drum dance. I had seen the big drum dance in progress on various occasions, but for the most part, what I learned about it, I learned from him, and there's a little poem about this visit that I'd like to read to you. Called Dream Feuds. One thing that's very interesting about this island is that there are so many different religious faiths represented on the island. Mm. He says seven main ones, hence the ecumenical aspect of the island, but he said there are any number of diverse, lesser-known faiths represented as well. He claimed, when I was visiting with him, that he particularly belongs to the Seventh-day Adventists. Mm. His brother is a Jehovah's Witness. And sometimes they get into rather big quarrels because of their differences. And one of those quarrels comes up in this poem entitled Dream Feuds. Fleury's most popular drum dances are animal imitations, those fabulous beasts of folklore coming back to life in his mime troupe prancings. The python, the pit viper, a whole strung-out series of serpently undulations and slithers, backed up by costumes, comic and scary by turns. Children of all ages would be jolted from tears to laughter in seconds. But he takes most pride in his aviary dance cycle. Old hen, tall gangly rooster, and slow-paced struts of the peacock, topped off by arm swings, displaying the great wingspread flash of tall, quivery feathers, emblazoned with gold stripes and turquoise flamy eyes. He trots out sample pivots and whirls in his front room parlor, his quick reflexes at 57, too nimble for my failing eyes to keep his limbs in focus, a blur now and again. but he breaks off in mid-leap, reminded it's time to call in his yard gobblers from feeding. 3 cows, 1 mule, and 2 goats have got to be rope-tethered or penned before they wander too far astray. Last week, his prize heifer bolted into a neighbor's lush garden trellis 2 miles out in the valley, broke down the fence, and trampled rare flower beds. Renegade calf impounded by the warden, he paid sizable fees to win her release. So we hobble over a fallen tree trunks, a few boulders and old stumps, soon targeting and rounding up all but one of his domestic brood, while Flurry takes a zest to fussily looping the ropes around sturdy fence rails. Following an impulse, I lead the hunt for the missing goat. She turns up, guzzling from a slow brook trickle in the half-hidden culvert. He sighs relief and commends me for the lucky find. You're quite the goat herd for a poet, Larry. Both puffing, we straddle a bench seat, and he drifts into a tale about his mature ox he quartered for sale and export last week. How he loves to raise farm animals. It's the joy of mollycoddling over them that keeps him island-bound, or he'd travel more routinely on tour with his music squad. But the talk swerves to a sad case of sibling feuds. A dark pall crosses his features, for yesterday's heartsick tussle with his brother comes back to haunt him. Once again, he says, we locked horns over dreams. Last Sunday, he awoke in a fever and hard sweat, his bedclothes totally soaked from a prophetic dream that flung him headlong to the floor with its turbulent vision. He read that dream's bidding instantly. It sent him post-haste to his house rear, a keen-edged axe propped, blade high on his left shoulder, and he set about with exacting care to slaughter Raleigh, his aging prime steer, following in meticulous detail the precise style of quartering the ox that was dictated by the dream's clairvoyant map for dismemberment. He'd read the sleep vision's message as one might consult an instruction manual. Ah, how wonderful to be guided, he felt, by his spirit overlord, when and howsoever to dispatch his critter from market. True blessing it was to espouse that Seventh-day Adventist gift to read the pure language of dreams. But when he broke the news to his elder brother Ignatius, a Jehovah's Witness, the old debate erupted between them. Wrong readings, his kin protested. Sleep's pole star spoke opposite marvels. You should pamper your ox, keeping it robust for years more. And Ignatius went over the dream's message in hair-splitting detail, canceling out Flurry's wrong takes on the images and symbols. 2 dream masters in battle, haggling for their soul's high turf. The world of spirits left far behind?
Dream Feuds, a poem by Lawrence Lieberman from his recently published book, Caribs Leap, CARIBS, Caribs Leap, published by Peepal Tree Press in England, available in this country through the Independent Publishers Group, read on the air by, with permission, of course, from the author and reader, poet Lawrence Lieberman, and also Peepal Tree Press. Well, the kind of divisions and the kind of arguments, feuds between people of different faiths, often from the same family. Do you have any of that in your history?
Well, my family is Jewish, and virtually all of the my cousins and aunts and uncles and my parents were all Jewish. Some more orthodox than others, so there would be some conflict that way.
Mm-hmm. And by more orthodox, are any Reformed, conservative?
I would say that my family, when I grew up in Detroit, was Reformed indeed.
So how does a good Jewish boy from Detroit end up writing all these poetry, all these poems about people who came to the Caribbean from all over the world, largely from Africa?
Interesting question. I've been asking myself that question for many years. I do have a strong commitment to learning about the Jews in the Caribbean, and indeed have relished the opportunity to visit some of the earliest synagogues in the Western Hemisphere, in particular the one in Kerikou. I'm sorry, I meant to say in
Grenada?
Curaçao. Curaçao. Okay. That's the island that houses the oldest synagogue. Suriname has the second oldest. I visited that one as well. Uh-huh. But the ruins of the synagogue in the Dutch island St. Eustatius, which I visited as well, provided a keen basis for my identifying the plight of the Jews of that island, who were banished, who were sent into exile by a British admiral. And the ruins of that synagogue so closely resembled the ruins of a slave house nearby that I sensed some commingling of spirits of the exiled Jews and the Africans. In my poem Dark Songs, Slave House and Synagogue, which appears in this anthology, or rather in this collection of my work, deals with that sense of a kind of nexus between the plight of the Jews and the plight of the Africans.
Another one of your poems in this series of new poems included as part of this collection that deal with this great big drum dance is called Song for the Stone Face, and you have a few sentences in here I'd like to read with your permission.
Please.
But on funeral days, they rose to a common scale of loving kindness. This is after you've listed all these Seventh-day Adventists, Jehovah's Witnesses, other people. On funeral days, they rose to a common scale of loving kindness. The mindset engendered by drum dance gave them all an unbroken bond of one. That one drum beat ruled their lives. It fed their nation faith, and they thrived on music riffs. It yoked numerous big drum sects from old Africa, which grew to be one in many, many in one, one sun, one moon, one God. All diverse or opposed views were, in Kariakou, fused in the one note, that single drum beat. A twin of the human heartbeat, that miniature of the voice of God in you. I found that very moving, that out of all this diversity, this African tradition of the drum dance could somehow pull people together. Tell us what that was like to see.
Indeed, that was so beautiful. And for the most part, this is the sense that prevailed. The sense of a strong communal pulling together of peoples of whatever different faiths. Thank you for the beautiful reading of those lines. The passage that you just read, of course, is from the first poem in the sequence. And indeed, when I first met Winston Fleury, he had just come from that funeral. So he was very, very much steeped in the experience, and both described it to me and even to some extent acted it out to me physically. Almost all the time we were talking, he was moving like a dancer as he described events.
We probably have time only for one more poem, Larry, but if you'd think about what other one you'd like to read while I reintroduce you to listeners who may have tuned in late to Keeping the Faith this week. We're talking with Lawrence Lieberman from the University of Illinois Department of English. You've been retired now how long?
half a year.
Partially retired.
Most of the year.
And still editing the poetry series for the University of Illinois Press.
Yes.
Right. He'd been reading from his book, Caribs Leap. And we've not been asking for phone calls today because Ed Kieser here at WILL is carefully watching the weather situation, and we need to be ready for him to break in at any moment with important weather news for our listeners. But in the meantime, we'll try to sneak in one more poem. These are all from Lawrence Lieberman's recent book, Carib's Leap, C-A-R-I-B, apostrophe S, selected and new poems of the Caribbean, available from Independent Publishers Group. And I gave the 800 number earlier. Let me repeat that, 1-800-888-4741. For people who'd like copies of the book who are farther away from the IUB, the Illini Union Bookstore here at the University of Illinois on the corner of Daniel and Wright Street. Have you another poem for us?
Yes. I'd like to read a poem called Homemade Power and Light. As it happens, this is one of the poems in the news section, and it is indeed the poem that ends the book. Just a word about this. The poem deals with the life and work of a man in Grand Turk, in the Turks and Caicos Islands. His name is Osvaldo Arisa. He's from the Dominican Republic, and he's the chief electrician of the Turks and Caicos. When I met him, I discovered within a few minutes of our meeting that he had come to Central Illinois with his brother as guests of our State Department to study the electrical infrastructure of various small towns, including Rantoul, and even visited the Caterpillar plant in Peoria. Here's a poem, then, about his first bringing electricity to the Turks and Caicos Islands. He is also a historian and taught me a great deal of history of the islands. It's not unusual for the islanders to wear many hats, and he's has equal passions as an electrician and as a historian. Homemade Power and Light. When called upon by the newly appointed governor to inaugurate light, to be Grand Turk's first high custodian of electric power, he practiced in his own family yard, running two strings of light sockets through his home from end to end, south to north, east to west, the latter cable snaking out his rear window across the patio and wound twice about his wife Manuela's clotheslines, then woven at last in two loops atop ivy trellis bordering the neighbor's house lot and property line, the last few glass bulbs nodding to adjacent rose blooms and multicolored peonies. That first night, just after twilight, he made a few minor adjustments in the rough-hewn transformer and threw the main switch. Intense flash of combined lights and blossoms lit up their whole neighborhood like a fully charged Christmas tree. Folks came running from six sides. An all-night yard party commenced, every household pitching in booze and snacks to celebrate the Isle's first homemade power and light utility. In coming months, he would go rummaging through derelict old houses, linking one and all to his main cable, and then he'd install outlets, fuse box and rudimentary wiring in both vacant and occupied dwellings alike. He loved best to prowl around homes long emptied of all inmates, whether abandoned lodge or outright ruin, scouting for lost tools, machine parts, historic keepsakes or memorabilia, animal harnesses, old wheels, wheel hubs, wagon axles, old boat parts, oars, tillers, masts, sails, and outboard motors. No matter how rusty, layered and yellowed with mildew, riddled with fungus or slime, he grooved on the finds. All salvages were precious to him. Of recent or remote vintage, they held the past. Oh, how might he reconcile his twin callings, electrical swizz and sleuth historian? His first rage was to find novel use for old, never truly obsolete artifact or disassembled engine gizmo. Shrewd alchemist of rejects, throwaways he was. If you don't make new again discards, he told his grandkids, you have no future. Steamship funnels make best chimney flues. Transfer from boat to homestead, he lordly prized.
A poem titled Homemade Power and Light by Lawrence Lieberman, the last poem in his recently published collection, Carib's Leap, a book of, let's see, how many pages? 262 pages of poems from his long career, including new poems. Larry has been published in The New Yorker, Atlantic Monthly, American Poetry Review, Hudson Review, New Republic, Swanee Review, Kenyon Review, The Nation, Partisan Review, Paris Review, Yale Review, Southern Review. A wonderful lifetime devoted to writing poetry, appreciated widely, and collected in this most recent book, published in England by Peepal Tree Press. These poems were read on the air live here on Keeping the Faith by permission of the publisher and, of course, by the author who's with us here in the studio. Larry, this poem that talks about all of these collections, all these things, John Kenneth Galbraith, the economist, died this weekend, and on All Things Considered, in the hour before us, they were talking about his concern with the problems of people having so much in America and yet so close by, like in the Caribbean and other places that are still often very poor. Our extravagance, our waste, our having all these things that we just discard and throw away. Your line in here, if you don't make new again discards, you have no future. That's such an attitude is so foreign to the United States of America.
Yes, and that is a tragic aspect of our culture. I think one of the beauties of the Caribbean culture for me is this passion to find new uses for the old things, to keep the things alive, keep them with them, to reinvent them.
We have reached the end of our time, and want to thank our poet Lawrence Lieberman for reading from his new book Caribs Leap for us on this program. This last topic, of course, reminds me, as director of the Campus Y, of our grand recycling program called Dump and Run, where instead of dumping things in dumpsters, we encourage students and others in this community around Champaign-Urbana to bring things that still have life in them, that are still useful, to the Y. We'll be collecting things starting May 8. We do this every spring, and when students are leaving campus and other people are moving, sometimes faculty, and if there's something you have that's good but that you don't have room for anymore or can't afford to move or don't want to send back home or take back home, do bring it to the Y. We collect these things. We save them in huge semi-trailers all over the summer. And then we have a grand sale next fall in late August when students come back and international students come into needing things. And we sell them very inexpensively, but it helps people who buy them. It raises money for the Y, and we do recycle. So I appreciate very much your reading this poem because it led me into be able to give this announcement. So the week of May 8 is when we'll be collecting at the Y. We'll have big boxes around the campus that students will see Dump and Run on it. Please put useful clothes, household items, computers that work, almost anything. We don't accept big appliances, beds, and that sort of thing. But that's the week of May 8th at the University Y, the corner of Chalmers and Wright Street. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs. Again, I apologize we weren't able to take calls because of the weather emergencies. We'll be having that information soon. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
WILL programming is funded in part by a grant from TK Service Center, 806 Perkins Road in Urbana, offering automotive repair on cars and trucks by ASE-certified technicians. In business since 1984, they perform computerized engine diagnostics, alignments, brake, suspension, preventative maintenance, and other repairs. A shuttle service for customers is also available. 344-0800 or on the web at tkservicecenter.com.
A severe thunderstorm watch is in effect until 7 o'clock tonight for portions of central Illinois. In the WILL severe weather coverage area, the following counties are included: Champaign, Christian, Coles, Cumberland, DeWitt, Douglas, Logan, Macon, Moultrie, Piatt, Sangamon, and Shelby counties. Repeating, a severe thunderstorm watch is in effect for portions of central Illinois until 7 o'clock tonight.
A flash flood warning remains in effect for Logan County in the WILL severe weather coverage area and neighboring Menard County until 8 o'clock this evening.
WBEZ Chicago and Public Radio International, it's This American Life, I'm Ira Glass. Dangers all around us, in ways we do not even suspect.
Crime Blotter, the Athens Daily News, Athens, Georgia. Athens-Clark police investigated several weekend burglaries, including one in which a burglar stopped to prepare a sandwich. A Cobb Street resident told police someone cut out the window screen between 10 a.m. and 10:45 p.m. Saturday. But nothing appeared to be missing inside except enough bread and sandwich meat to make a sandwich, the resident told police. The incident is similar to several other break-ins in the past few days, including one Wednesday in which a burglar drank a bottle of beer, and another Tuesday in which a burglar prepared a turkey sandwich.
We think of crime as a kind of monolithic, menacing presence. A shadowy threat, lurking, faceless. But there are many kinds of crimes and many kinds of criminals. Take these crimes, ripped from today's headlines.
Crime Blotter, the Anacortes American, Anacortes, Washington. A woman's persistence rewarded her with a shoplifting citation after she attempted to steal four 40-ounce bottles of beer, one at a time, from the old Salt's convenience store on Skyline Way. The owner of the store told police that the woman, who appeared intoxicated to begin with, entered the store and went to the beer cooler, where she selected a 40-ounce Lucky Lager and left without paying. The owner quickly followed the woman and brought her back in the store. Undaunted by her apprehension, the woman again returned to the cooler, selected another Lucky, and again walked out, closely followed by the owner, who once again returned her to the store. When the owner went to her phone to call police, the persistent woman again jumped to the beer cooler, this time selected a 40-ounce bottle of Milwaukee's Best, and started drinking down the brew as she left the store. The owner followed and once again returned the shoplifter to her store to wait for police. Apparently still a little parched, the woman returned to the cooler for a fourth time and grabbed a 40-ounce bottle of St. Ides. This time, however, she didn't bother leaving the store and chugged it down where she stood. The woman was cited for third-degree theft and then taken home and turned over to her husband.
Stories about crime, no matter how simple, are kind of snapshot of someone's life and their problems at a certain moment. Through our crimes, we express who we are.
Crime Blotter, the Anacortes American, Anacortes, Washington. Police arrested a 22-year-old Anacortes man Saturday morning, July 11th, for causing a disturbance after he allegedly hurled potato salad at kids attending a festival and, in the presence of a police officer, threatened to kill the operator of an inflatable obstacle course. The man told police he was upset because the festival, which started at 10 a.m., was disrupting his sleep. The man was booked into Skagit County Jail on a charge of disorderly conduct.
Today on our radio program,